This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning to you.
Good Sunday morning. Lots of things happening. Lots of things going on in all different sectors. You know, Scott, historically, we've stayed away from having full political shows. But there's so much going on in that arena that I think we agreed that we want to focus in a little bit on that, particularly as, New Yorkers originally, you know, taking a look at surprising at this point in time, you know, ascension of Mamdani, a 34-year-old basically state rep who's become the mayor of the city of New York, the largest city in the United States, and all of the other things that have happened in this off-year election, some of the impact on Montana, some of the things that are happening in the White House and with Congress, you know, being, basically unfunding or non-funding the budget and flight cutbacks at, you know, right around Thanksgiving time and all this kind of craziness that's really going on. It would be unrealistic for us to ignore all of this. So we've asked our good friend and, you know, colleague and guest Eric Stern to join us today to try
frequent
to
guest.
Yeah, frequent guest on this and, you know, a news talk to go through some of this stuff and try to put some clarity to it all.
I'm looking forward to it, Arnie. We always love having Eric in. He's never shy to share his opinion. And
he always has a lot of good information.
He sure does. He does at that. Anyway, we're taping this show on the 7th of November. So when you hear this, we still may be in a shutdown. We may not be. But this has been a pretty staggering kind of elections from our perspective in terms of just the blue kind of wave that we've seen. And we haven't seen that in, God, I don't know how long. So this is an interesting conversation. We'll be back with our guest, Eric Stern, right after these words. All right, Arnie, we are back with our guest, Eric Stern.
Eric, it's great to have you on the show again.
Hey, guys. Happy to be here.
Where are we talking to you from today?
Just Helena, Montana.
Good. You know, we've had Eric on a number of times, and he's been on a number of other shows on KGVO. He's also been on MSNBC and CNN and has been a contributor and commentator for those outlets and the New York Times and Salon and Bloomberg and many, many others. But just to give our unacquainted listeners a bigger background of why we consider you an expert commentator on the topics today is early in Eric's career, he was did lead advance for the White House. He spent a number of years as a senior counsel and advisor to the very popular Governor Brian Schweitzer here in Montana. He served a three-year stint as Deputy Secretary of State. He's been an attorney involved in legal defense fund on a variety of environmental issues. He manages currently an investment ventures fund. So he has a broad background to give us his input on what's going on. Plus, he's a native New Yorker. And a lot of what we are going to talk about today, I think, impacts New York because we're going to talk about the Zohran Mamdani election where a million New Yorkers, you know, voted for him. We're going to probably touch on Michelle Wu, the second term mayor in Boston who ran unopposed for mayor of Boston, which is very unusual. The passage of Proposition 50 in California by a 2-1 vote, which is the redistricting of the state, and the impact that has on national demographics and national districting efforts. The election of the 13th and 14th women governors in the United States. There are now 15 women governors with Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey and Abigail Spanberger in Virginia. There's been a modest blue wave during this off-year election. The Virginia legislature flipped 13 House seats to give the Democrats in Virginia the biggest majority in 40 years. in Georgia, the public utilities added two Democrats for the first time in 20 years, and each of them got 60% of the vote. And that's just a few of the headlines. I want to go through these individually, and with Scott taking the lead. But I want to ask Eric, just on the big picture perspective, is this earth-shattering? Is this monumental? Is this an omen of what's going to happen? Is there a blue tidal wave? What's your take on the impact of this on the national election scene?
No, I don't know how consequential it is for 2028. I think it's consequential for 2026 because these are sort of like mini midterms. So, yeah, you could call it a blue wave, but a lot of it is because the red water sort of evaporated this time around. This is, Trump. No, I've always said nobody gets out the Democratic vote like Trump. He is a Democratic voter GOTV turnout machine because, liberals and Democrats, liberals, they hate him. They hate him. And, so what do you have? You have an election here. First of all, the president is very unpopular right now. He's at below 40% in a lot of polls. He's the same place that he was in the first term when he lost for re-election. He's the same place that Joe Biden was when he lost re-election, which is a very unpopular president with high negatives and a lot of people very dissatisfied with his job. But what you're seeing is an electorate that comes out that's heavily skewed Democrat because Trump has a lot of fans that vote for him, but they don't vote for Republicans. They're not really Republicans. They're Trumpsters. Those folks didn't come out. And that to me is where the discrepancy comes from.
That's an interesting take that they were. It's not just a Republican, leadership issue. It's a Trump. It's Trump versus Republican Party versus Democrats.
The Republican and the term Republican Party means almost nothing to Trump voters anymore. It really doesn't. Only insofar as it's helping oppose liberals and Democrats. But beyond that, they have very little love for the political party called the Republican Party. It is for Trump and Trumpism that they show up.
Interesting. That's a good, interesting overall take. Scott, you want to lead us on some of these elections?
Yeah, well, I think we should put a finer point. Why do we think so many Democrats turned out? And what was the impetus for that? I mean, it's definitely anti-Trump, but the sentiment of lack of affordability, right? Like the economic argument seems to be the argument that really energized everybody. It's what each of these campaigns kind of leaned into. So that's one. And, Zohran Mamdani is, that was his whole platform, right? And there were variations of that platform. Eric, what do you think about that?
Zohran Mamdani got elected because what he was saying was correct, which is that no one can afford anything in New York City anymore. And Andrew Cuomo was the kind of just day old bread. He was part of the problem, as a lot of Irish voters saw it, because when you've been around a long time and there is suddenly a huge problem of dislocation, in the voting jurisdiction, they're not going to cut you any favors if you're the guy who's been around for a long time. They will vote for the new person. And so Cuomo really didn't have anything to say about affordability. And it's not even clear that he fully grasped the problem. And he had other problems as well. He had sex scandals and things like that. The other thing is, remember, that's hard to believe, but New York is still a two-party system, and there was a Republican in the race, and then there was Mamdani, who had the Democratic nomination, and then a well-known Democrat shows up and runs as an independent, and obviously that will always in any other jurisdiction that would
right
the election to the Republican, but in this case, it just didn't really, and it turns out, by the way, that even if the Republican had gotten out of the race, Cuomo still would have lost.
Right. So, that's correct. I was going to say the remarkable statistics from this election, Arnie and Eric, are the following. Voter turnout was incredibly high, over 2 million votes cast, the most for a New York City mayoral race since 1969. Arnie,
Right.
when you were in high school or graduating high school. It was historic because he is the first, Mamdani is the first Muslim mayor, the youngest in over a century. Sliwa got approximately 7.1% of the vote, Cuomo 41.6% of the vote, but Mamdani got 50.4%. So if you combine the two of them, they still wouldn't have beat him, as you said, Eric.
That's right. That's right. And remember, there's people turning out for a lot of different reasons in that. In other words,
Yes.
a lot of people were just turning out to vote because they were, in a way, they wanted to vote because that's the only outlet you have. What people who hate Trump, right? New York is full of people who do not like Donald Trump. And this is an election day where you go out to vote, and you are, in theory, just by exercising your vote as a Democrat, you are voting against the president.
Right.
And so that's maybe less in the Mamdani race, but certainly in the governor's race, it's in Virginia and New Jersey.
Right. Let's
So.
turn our attention to that. But real quickly before we leave Mamdani, there were three Jewish Americans on this podcast. Do any of us have any concerns about his election and what it means for life in New York City? Or was that something that was a cudgel or an issue that was magnified by the opposition?
Arnie, you want to take that?
Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of magnification going on in all of this. I mean, Rafael Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, said that Zohran Mamdani is a communist and a jihadist. I mean, neither of those things are true. I
Well,
mean,
it's
he may
funny.
be.
He, by the way, he said that he said only within the last 2 years that the goal is to seize the means of production. He said that in an interview on video.
Yes, he
So,
did,
you know,
but that was related to a
so
specific.
it's not crazy to call him a communist. It might be wrong, but it's not crazy. When you
Well,
say things like that, you have someone. It's a fair question. So, well, if that's what you believe, isn't that communism?
right. But I'm not defending him. I'm just saying it was taken a bit out of context. He was referring to the food chain and some other things in terms of getting groceries on the streets. But let's talk about some of the things that he's being accused of. They're saying thousands of New Yorkers and many, many billionaires are going to leave New York City. What do you say to that?
We'll see. I mean, I think I think you're a silly person if someone gets elected, then you immediately say, I'm
Right.
leaving. You know, it's just like these people that say they're leaving America because Trump got
Right.
elected.
Well,
I think that's
silly
just
to think billionaires.
childishness, but I don't, well, we'll see what my, I
We'll
don't
see
know
what
what,
happens.
you'll
But
see,
it's.
the mayor doesn't have a lot of power over taxation.
Right.
So
You
I
know,
don't know.
and you're exactly right. And most billionaires have figured out a way how to avoid taxes. Just because they live in New York doesn't mean that all of their income is taxed in New York.
I mean,
They
there's
live
no question.
other
If you got
places
a
as
lot of,
well.
if you make a lot of dough, and you can do it, and you can change your residence to Florida or whatever, and you're in New York now, you probably can save money. But that's with or without Mamdani, you can do,
Right.
you know, a lot of
That's
these things.
right. We're going to make
You were
that
doing that
decision
anyway.
regardless. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see, how this all, plays out. But they're certainly going to play the communist angle, the socialist. There's no.
Oh, I mean, I think the more important thing about that has to be said in favor of Mamdani is that this is the city that for has been a supply side type of city for really as long as I've been alive and even old enough to even read the news.
Yes.
What you do in New York is you build a building and you make as much money as you can. And nobody says, well, wait a minute, that's not really a great idea because at some point we're going to have a problem and people aren't going to be able to afford anything. So all you do is you build a building and you offer the cheapest apartments are $5 million, right? And then someone builds another building and says, no, I'm doing one with the cheapest ones are $7 million or $15 million. And they get sold to, a lot of times get sold to people who don't even live in America and don't even show up here and they remain vacant. And when you do that, you're creating a bigger problem because it lacks density. And you're creating an affordability problem with that blueprint. because right. you could build a building with a lot of many more units that start at 500 grand and instead of 5 million. So I, you know, nobody has ever planned this stuff. The only thing New York ever does is establish some rent control. So they have that law right. that freezes rent on but no one plans. And so this is effectively the end result of a long-term lack of planning. And when the only thing that's happening is that everybody, right. every real estate, Jared Kushner or whoever it is that builds buildings, is just trying to make as much money as possible and sell these units to Russian oligarchs, you know, at some right. point, at some point, you're going to have a situation
well, you're
where no one
right.
can afford, the workers cannot afford not only to live in New York City, but to even live anywhere near New York City. And
that's
frankly,
right.
sometimes wonder how you can afford a workforce at all in a place like that. So, and that's the part that Cuomo and Republicans and everybody really are really trying to cover up, and they don't want to see it discussed because it's legitimate.
Right.
And,
well,
and no
the point of affordability, as you know, Eric and Scott, every city, name me a city where affordability is not an issue right now.
Right.
I mean, it's right. every city from Missoula to Helena to Dallas to Miami, anywhere you want to go, everybody's talking about affordability. And New York happens to be the largest city in the country tackling the most difficult problem that no one else in the whole United States has been able to figure out.
Which brings me to the other point, which is that, you know, Trump won because of inflation, but now he owns any further inflation. And
right.
he also owns any lack of solution to inflation. And in other words, you get a little bit of a honeymoon, but if you've been in office for 8 months or whatever it is, or 9 months, and then and things are creeping up, and you're taking measures, the tariffs, that actually make things more expensive, then
right.
you kind of own it now. And
right.
suddenly it's not about it's not Bidenflation anymore, and it starts
right.
to become Trumpflation. I think we're already at that spot, and that's another reason why, you know, you didn't really see much coming, you know, you didn't really see Republican voters turn out. Because
they couldn't, right. That's
yeah.
right. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's go across the river. Mikey Sherrill defeats Jack Cittarelli in the governor's race. I mean, Eric, you and I are from Jersey. Highest turnout in more than two decades. 50% of registered voters cast ballots.
Double digit
turnout,
win.
That turnout really surprised. That size of that turnout in New Jersey.
Huge.
Surprised me. But it's not surprising that she won. A Republican cannot win statewide offices. A well-attended election with even a modest turnout right now, I'm not sure, especially in an off year for Donald Trump, I'm not sure that was ever possible for a Republican victory. I would say the same thing about Virginia.
Right.
I don't know that it was ever seriously in play.
No,
and even when
the
polls, the internal polling that I saw, you know, from people I know who worked on one of those races, actually both of those races, that even when, you know, public polling was saying, oh, it's getting tight and it's 1%, you know, difference now. That was not true. It was really still close to double digits.
Yeah. And they both won by double digits.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not sure. I don't know that New Jersey, and by the way, Virginia, well, you can stick to New Jersey. I mean, New Jersey used to be a place where Republicans would get elected statewide and people like Chris Christie. Donald Trump has changed the math in places like that, and I
right.
just don't know that it's going to get a lot harder for Republicans to really produce. It's going to start to look more like Montana for Democrats.
Yeah,
so.
Isn't that the truth? And then look real quickly on Virginia: Abigail Spanberger defeats Winsome Earl Sears almost by the same exact.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Arn? The same exact kind
yeah.
of spread. She's the first female governor, and geez, I mean.
Well, what's interesting about both of them is they're not screaming liberals in the traditional sense
right.
of it. I mean,
yeah.
you know, Sherrill, you know, was a Navy helicopter pilot, and Spanberger was a CIA operative.
By the way, these gals, just to be clear, they did not run very good campaigns. There were a lot of very poorly handled issues. And
right,
so,
people were concerned about it. They
yeah,
were concerned.
So, but it didn't matter. In the end, I'm telling you, the numbers,
right.
it really didn't matter because it was going to be such a lopsided election day. And that's just about where we are right now, who's president, what's going on, you know. And remember also, and Virginia has the added piece, which is that an enormous number of not just federal workers, but people right. whose job depend upon the federal government one way or the other. So that's a piece that has changed Virginia over the long term, 20, 30 years. Wasn't it the seat of the Confederacy at one time? Wasn't that Richmond? Yeah. And so, but gradually as it became so entwined with federal government, you know, the hostility of Republicans toward federal workers, that has had a cost over time. And especially now that you have a shutdown going on election day, obviously.
Right. As of this taping, when we tape this show, we're in day 37,
right.
day of the shutdown. So right. that and affordability, definitely.
And no end in sight. But I have an interesting observation I want to get from you, Eric. When you were advising Brian Schweitzer as governor, there were six women governors. There are now 15. Is that important? A change? Is there something going on there beside just numbers and chance?
No, I think. Well, remember, I think that it's if you look at who votes in the Democratic Party, it is a majority female vote. So that's part of it. It's mm-hmm. reflect. It's those women. How many of those women are Republicans?
Not many.
Yeah, I mean those. You know, it is more likely now to be a female to have a female governor because more than in previous eras, the majority vote of Democrats is
female.
Is female. So that adds up over time. Mm-hmm. And so it is important. It is important because there was a time when you had no female governors.
Yeah. I think the other interesting point about Virginia, where you mentioned the seat of the Confederacy, is that 13 seats flipped. That's a lot of seats flipping.
Yeah, but again, it's a lopsided electorate, and that's what happens when you have a lopsided electorate.
Right.
You have all sorts of collateral damage and or collateral success, depending on how you look at
right.
it.
Right.
And it's just the nature of the beast.
Let me just bring up one thing. I'm going to surprise both of you with a little factoid. Let's go a little further down the Eastern Seaboard or close to it. This is an interesting result. The Georgia Public Service Commission, PSC, in District 2 and District 3. I mean, this is talk about a barometer. Alicia Johnson, Democrat, defeated incumbent Tim Echols, Republican. And then Peter Hubbard, Democrat, defeated Fitz Johnson. Both seats flipped from Republican to Democrat. This is the first – they're giving Democrats their first seats on the commission in many, 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 many years, right?
20 years.
20 years, Arnie.
And they both got 60% of the vote. It wasn't even close.
But what does that say? I mean, you know, you could talk about Virginia and New Jersey reliably blue.
Georgia has two Democratic senators right now.
Yeah.
Right.
So the trend in Georgia is away from red and into purple, and you know,
it Georgia has been
a very, very, very tight state right now. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny for you mentioned that they have two senators, as you pointed out, that are Democrats. One is Afro American, the other one's Jewish. That's unusual for Georgia.
Yeah. And it is unusual. I mean, it is kind of surprising if you think about it. And we'll see if those guys can you know, remember they are it's the question is, can they defend those seats in the coming
year? That's right, exactly.
That's a good question. Well, let's zoom out a little bit, Arnie. Let's not even talk about elections. Let's talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's been on a 3-week media tour of trying to, I guess, prime herself for being, you know, for a presidential run or something like that in 2028.
Well, I have my thoughts on this, but I want to ask Eric what he thinks she's up to.
What is she up to?
I don't really know. I mean, it's interesting. That's not the way you would run for president, I don't think.
No.
I don't think you would go up against – she's not really going up against Trump. She is in some cases trying to attack him from the right. I would call it an attack from the right. So on Israel, for example, that's probably smart politics for her. I don't think Israel has a lot of support anymore in this country on either side of the aisle. And so I think that's probably, you know, I understand strategically why she would take shots at Trump on that. And then I, But I don't, you know, and then I think her, the only thing I can explain it with is maybe she's actually legitimately figuring out that the Republicans are in an untenable position.
Yeah.
In the way that they are carrying things on right now. And you can't have, you know, a president who's a billionaire building a ballroom, building a $250 million ballroom, getting rich, making billions of dollars in office, you know, on deals that his son is working on while he's president. And, you know, and I just, right. I think maybe she has a better, because she doesn't, her district hasn't changed. I don't think that there's any real chance of a Democrat beating her in her district. It's a very Republican, unless I'm wrong. I think it's still a very Republican district.
Yeah, it's very Republican, but I think she's hearing from her district. It makes her nervous. I have a couple of thoughts on her. One is she wants to be Speaker of the House. She's going to go after, there's no question in my mind, she's going to go after Johnson. And the only way to do that is particularly with some, you know, Democrats. You know, she's going to need a few Democratic votes, probably, et cetera, is to kind of temper her position during this quest. But I think she's definitely using the midterm, using this off-year election. I think she's going to make a push to be Speaker of the House. Second thing is she didn't get anything from Trump. She wanted an ambassadorship. She wanted a cabinet seat. She didn't get it. She got, you know, she didn't get what Kristi Noem or the other ones got. And I think she's a little pissed.
Yeah, that part I buy. That one I buy.
I agree with that too.
Yeah, you watch and see. She's going to make an effort to unseat Johnson. She'd like to have to be the speaker.
Interesting. I don't know what. Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, generally speaking, you want in the Republican Party, you unseat the speaker by coming at him from the right, and she's sort of coming at it from the left. It doesn't. We haven't seen anybody succeed with that strategy.
Well, she's a little bit on the right. She's talking about you know, she's talking about inflation. She's talking about, you know, some of these others. She's staying away from health care and all those kinds of issues. But she is getting a sense that all this baloney about how all the prices are coming down is not true. And she's hearing it from her own electorate. I think she's on to something here if she's interested in advancing her career.
I mean, I'll tell you is when Arnie Sherman and Scott Richmond are talking about how great some Republicans are
in Georgia,
I promise you, that's not career advancement for a Republican office holder.
No, I'm not saying she's great. I'm saying she's very
terminal.
I don't think she's great at all. I think this is
you
a
know,
phony.
Liz Cheney is not running for any Republican office anymore.
No, I'm not saying that this is great. I think this is phony. This is just a phony way to show that maybe I'm a better person to be in the job than somebody who's just going to be a complete sycophant.
That's correct.
Maybe.
I'm with Arnie on this, and I'll put a finer point on it. She has a difficult time explaining away her past comments and her past conspiracy theory, you know, commitments. And the last thing is that, you know, she was on The View. She was on Bill Maher. She's doing this retribution tour. I think it falls flat. That's my prediction. I just do.
Yep.
All right. Let's zoom out a little further. Let's look at Prop 50. Let's go to California, Arnie. And why don't we explain that one?
1-2-1. So Gavin Newsom, I think, was smart going to the electorate with this issue rather than just like a lot of other states, just using the legislature to make the change. He could have done that. Democrats control the California legislature, but he took it to the voters and got a 2-1 vote in support. So I think it was a smart strategy. You know, it could deliver 5 new seats for Democrats while the Republicans are trying to, you know, do the, you know, the same thing in Texas and some other places. I think all of this politicizing, which has always been the case, but it is much more visible now and much more ubiquitous, of trying to adjust during midterms or prior to midterms the districts in order to squeeze another Republican district or a Democratic district out of your state is a failed strategy. I don't know what
you think. It used to be that there were some ground rules and both parties said, look, here's the here are some rules we won't violate. We'll redistrict every 10 years and we'll sort of, you know, may the best man win. And we know that Trump, when Trump thinks he's going to lose, he immediately tries to change the rules. And that's what he's doing. It's or deny that there is even a contest to begin with. And so he basically knows he's going. He's not looking good for the midterms. He's now 12 months away now. And so he's figured out that, well, let's just try to draw more Republican districts and change the balance in the House. And that way, even if the Democrats win more seats, they can still hold on. Republicans can still hold on to the House. And so, yeah, you have to. Once he did that, once Trump started the ball rolling on that, every Democratic state has to do it, too. Every Republican state will do it. And you're just going to where it all ends up and what the two piles look like standing next to each other in the end. I'm not really sure, because there are a lot of questions about which states, especially the large ones, are going to be able to actually pull this off.
Right.
Legally. So because there are different
challenges.
There are different processes in different states over how you do this. California was able to do it with a ballot measure. And I'm not surprised. No one should be surprised that it passed. That's a Democrat, very strongly Democratic state, very anti-Trump state. That was going to pass. But I just, what it ultimately looks like in the end when all these states that can do this have done it, I don't know that. I'm not sure.
Right. And they've gone through all the legal challenges. I mean, they've already challenged Proposition 50 in California. Right. So it's hard to tell. I thought it was interesting that this past week Trump called the Republican senators in and asked them to, launch the nuclear option.
Right.
And Thune said no, at least initially he said no. His lead senator says, I don't have the votes for it. So is Trump going to keep pushing this and try to get the votes and get the Senate to change the
filibuster
from 60% to 50% and then try to push everything he could possibly push through?
Yeah, he will. Yeah. He will. And in the meantime, he's canceling flights today and he's trying to sort of really push the envelope and I think kind of really redline everything. But I'm not sure. I don't know how this resolves. I really don't. I think in the end, it's going to resolve how it always does, which is that both sides will give a little bit and then it'll be over.
Well, do we feel like the crack in the armor or there's some daylight now between Trump and the Republicans in the sense that they're starting to splinter off from him? And this is becoming, this past Tuesday night is just a further kind of wedge or chasm that is going to start widening, because if they start seeing that, if these, folks that are maintaining their seats now and see this as being a precursor to 2026 or 28, they're going to start distancing themselves from him, kind of like, Marjorie's doing a little bit.
The only thing I can tell you is going to happen in the next few days is that Trump is going to set his hair on fire in some way. He's going to do something crazy and something that gets everybody shouting and screaming. And he likes to light fires. And he likes the sound of the fire engines, coming to the rescue, because he's able to change when he doesn't like the current narrative.
The narrative.
Right now it's about how he lost 2 days ago, and that drives him crazy.
And it's also about Epstein.
Epstein, but also I don't think. Look, the Epstein stuff. I'm not sure that. Who knows what's there? But when Trump is being portrayed as losing a confrontation. Or failing.
He hates that,
and he will always do something crazy to draw away the attention and change the subject. And he's now doing it. And I don't think the shutdown is going his way, because when you have to cancel flights, you have to do that. That's him. His administration just canceled 10% of flights, and so it's fine to blame Democrats.
Right.
But the American public, generally speaking, when the president does something, it's the president that has done it. And so it's a little, so I don't know what the escape valve is going to be, but I expect him in the next few days to do something crazy.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. This weekend. This is a new news cycle. This weekend. It's tonight.
Tonight or tomorrow. It's interesting. The Democrats, have been holding fast on this healthcare issue. I just want to throw a couple of snippets in here and then talk about universal healthcare, or at least some manageable healthcare. One is I just saw my premiums coming up for the next year, and it's doubled what it was last year.
Jeez.
My Medicare supplement with Blue Cross Blue Shield has doubled in 1 year. Secondly, I was watching the Montana news last night, and there was a football player from Butte that was in a car accident, and the coach and the team had to create a GoFundMe site,
Ugh.
Which raised money so that he could get medical treatment because his family didn't have the kind of healthcare coverage that would handle the catastrophic injury that he had in an automobile accident. There are 78 countries, most of them developed, that have some form of universal health care. We're the only major country in the world that doesn't have something like that or doesn't guarantee health care as a basic human right. Why are we so obstinate on this issue and willing to go to the mat and shut the government down because of reasonable health care controls? The only thing that they've done, I can see in the last, you know, two terms they controlled, you know, the White House is going to try to lower the price of Ozempic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I mean, I was never a big fan of Obama. I don't think Obamacare. I mean, Obamacare had some good features, I thought, but it wasn't really addressing what you just laid out, Arnie.
Right.
And I think, and obviously, the Republicans have never had any answer at all. At least Obama tried.
Right.
But really, what Obama did with Obamacare is yield to the insurance industry and the hospital industry on key provisions so that they could keep making as much money as they do.
Yeah.
You can't have affordable health care when the president of a hospital makes $12 million, as we have in America.
Right.
The largest hospital in Toronto, the guy makes $500,000 a year. Here you make $12 million.
Right.
And that's not going to work. So anybody, you can chop it. You can blame the insurance. And by the way, the concept of health insurance as we have it doesn't really exist anywhere else in the world.
No.
Where some company where the president makes $40 million a year, you know, and they have, you know, $1 billion of earnings annually on their, you know, in their insurance business. That doesn't, for healthcare, that doesn't exist anywhere except America. And nor does, as you just pointed out, the very idea of not being able to afford medical care is really uniquely American now. It's really
yeah.
pathetic. But it is because it is a giant money-making arena. And it's when Wall Street runs medicine, that's what you get. And that's what we have. And I don't know that. And they also control the political system, because when you combine the might of the insurance industry with the, you know, the hospital industry, that, you know, they control elections. They put in enormous sums of money, not just to get senators and congressmen elected or unelected, but also to prevent them while in office from being, you know, from doing anything that would take away their cash cow.
Right.
So, and it's not just Republicans, it's Democrats too.
Right. But this is an issue that affects every single person in the country.
We should have had a universal health system established long ago, and we just went down a different path. And now, unfortunately, the path that we chose, it'd be nice to think we could somehow hybridize it. But it looks like there's just this entrenchment politically, and it looks inherently insoluble. And I don't know what the answer is going forward. I just don't.
No. But wait till you guys are on Medicare or at that level and you see what happens. it's outrageous. I want to ask Eric on a topic near and dear to his heart, which is environment and environmental issues. The U.S. government is sending no one to the world, you know, UN meeting on environmental issues. That's the first time ever. I think Gavin Newsom is going as the governor of the fourth largest economy in the world, or, you know, basically is going as California. What does that say to the rest of the world when we don't even show up for, you know, a global meeting to discuss a critical issue?
Well, I mean, you know what it says, but Trump doesn't care. I mean, Trump doesn't. Republicans basically have put themselves in a box where they can't talk about climate change at all, or even acknowledge it. So once you put yourself in that space, you can't back down. And so that's the result is yes, that you don't even send somebody to a conference, and then basically what you say is that there's not even anybody in our government that really is in charge of the issue.
Yeah, that's true. So I mentioned Gavin Newsom. You know, it looks like he's going to tee himself up to make a run for the White House in 2028. There's a lot of early talk on the Republican side of it being J.D. Vance slash Marco Rubio. I mentioned earlier this phenomena in Boston where you have a, Michelle Wu, second term. She's 40 years old. She just got elected to her second term as mayor of Boston, unopposed. Aren't there bright lights on the Democratic side at all? Because it looks like the Republicans kind of know where they're headed. Do we know where we're headed?
No, because we've become only a we hate Trump party. The energy in our party is in the Mandani Bernie Sanders faction. That's where all the energy is. Being a moderate Democrat right now, because of the way Democrats have conducted themselves the last 4, 5, 6 years, really doesn't really stand for anything that anybody has much interest in. It really just stands for the proposition that you hate Trump and that you are hysterical about him. And that you think that the world is ending every day for a different reason every day, something having to do with Trump or extremists or Republican extremists and all that stuff. And that's not, I've said that for a long time, that's not a basis on which to form a political party. I mean, right. Mandani, you can make fun of Mandani, but there's a reason for being. That wing of the party has a reason for being. And I don't know that centrist Democrats right now really have any. They can't really articulate anything except that we're all going to die because of Trump. Well, I don't know that that's really a message that really sells. Yeah. And so they have to work on that.
Well, it's a Democratic Party that has many different flavors or versions of the flavor, if you will. You have the right, you have the moderate, you have the progressive, you have the far left, you have the...
You have majority women voters. You have a lot of interesting, ways to cut the party.
I'm not sure that Vance is the one that's going to be able to make it to the finish line in 28 in the Republican primary. I don't think Rubio has a shot. I do not. And I think that Vance, his wife is a Hindu. The base voters in Trump world, they're not interested in that.
Right,
they don't like
right.
that. That's I mean, you saw that with Jeb Bush. His wife was a Mexican. They don't like that.
Well, he may be lining himself up for a new wife. You never know.
and then Rubio was always effectively very pro-immigration before his religious awakening and became a Trumpster. So I'm not sure that these guys really sell to the. And obviously, the other problem with Vance is, Vance was a Democrat, was essentially a Democrat in his first life. So I don't know. I'm not really sure where it all goes in 28.
Tucker Carlson.
Maybe. I mean, maybe. Why not? That, it makes sense. It would be following the Trump script.
I thought one of the most interesting exchanges in the political world this past week was between the Chief Justice John Roberts and the Solicitor General for the administration. When he was asked straight up who's paying for tariffs, and he said the American people.
Say that again, Arnie. I missed that.
A couple of days ago, in front of the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Roberts was grilling or talking, however you want to put it, the Solicitor General on this tariff issue, and he asked him straight up, "Who is paying for the tariffs in the United States?" And the Solicitor General said, the American people.
Which is a strange answer because they don't actually write the check. And so why would you say that? Unless
I have no idea.
even though there's a truth to it, it's sort of like not a very good. That's why that guy is a lawyer and not a political operative.
Yeah, he probably might not be Solicitor General anymore either.
Yeah, yeah.
No, definitely not. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is return champion Eric Stern. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Eric Stern.
So I want to clarify this among us three brilliant political strategists and globalists in terms of our understanding of the world. I mentioned earlier that Mamdani has been called a communist. He's been called a socialist. He describes himself, as does, Bernie Sanders, I think, a democratic socialist. There are 19 countries in the world, including most of Scandinavia, Iceland, Germany, UK, Spain, even that are governed largely by democratic socialists. So for our listeners, can we try to clarify the difference maybe between communism, socialism, and somebody who's now running the city of New York, who's self-described and has been described as a democratic socialist? You want to take a shot at that, Eric?
Well, all I'll say is, I mean, we have socialism and have always had it throughout America for 250 years. Your fire department, your police department, your utilities, your roads, your
Social Security,
Medicare, Medicaid, and just an enormous amount of other things are socialized in the sense that they are, the cost of them is spread out among everybody, and they are there to serve everybody equally. So I don't know why it's that crazy to say, well, we should have socialized medicine as long as we have socialized education as well. I mean, public schools are socialized, and you can opt out and send your kid to private school, but otherwise you are accepting a socialized service. And the only difference between America and the rest of the world is healthcare is included in the rest of the world, and right here it's here it's not. So I don't know, to call oneself a socialist, all Democrats and most Republicans are socialists to some degree. I mean,
in some of the most red states in this country have the largest proportion of SNAP, money going to them.
Right. But remember, there are Republicans who have run for office in Montana who really don't think we should have any government at all, that we shouldn't have, a police force, that we shouldn't have, God. I mean, you see these crazies, they come up from time to time. They really, really, really believe in almost having a kind of a society where nobody can tell anybody, what to do, and there's no authority at all. And so, I mean, I guess that's, but unless you're like that, and very few Republicans really are like that, then you at least believe in certain socialized services. And that's what government is. So, and in Europe, saying you're a democratic socialist doesn't really mean anything, because it's baked in.
Yeah, I think that's a very good explanation. And as a difference between socialists, we're not talking about being a socialist. That's, any country that's tried to run as a straight up socialist country hasn't done very well. They've either failed or.
And when someone accuses you. Right. And when someone accuses you of being a communist, there's two flavors of that. One is you're a Soviet style communist, like a Stalin, really just a dictatorial, horrible sort of, autocratic concept that uses Marxism as its excuse. But then there's the other one, which is the doctrinal version of communism, which you really never really, I don't know that you really ever saw it, maybe a little bit in Cuba, a little bit in the kibbutz areas and, Israel. The kind of legitimately sort of this collectivization, but doesn't really work.
Not in a country with 350 million people.
No.
You just can't do that.
So anyway.
Well, let's leave it there, everybody. This has been a wonderful conversation about the state of the state of our elections, government, and then how it impacts all of us. Arnie, anything you'd like to leave with?
Yes, I just want to congratulate the Missoula mayor for winning re-election. I think our mayor got, Andrew Davis got, 70% of the vote?
Nearly, yep.
Yep, so congratulations on another four-year term for a city that's voted, has been judged and voted one of the best managed small cities in America.
Right.
That's happy about that.
Eric, thanks again for coming on. We appreciate the time.
Oh, always happy to do it. Good to see you guys.
Thanks, Eric. You take care.
Arnie, I'll see you next Sunday.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.